4MK, the first regional commercial radio station in Queensland. So when you heard songs all those years ago, the only place you heard them on, of course, in commercial radio was 4MK. So when Split Enz started, you went to your local record bar, because it was vinyl back in those days, the 7-inch singles, 12-inch LPs, you go in there. Were you one of those people who did that? I wonder if Tim was. Good morning, Tim Finn. How are you going this morning?
I'm good, thanks, Dave.
Good to have you with us. So, mate, back to those early days, young kid growing up and so on, were you one of those who went into the local record bar and bought the occasional 7-inch single or the big LP you saved up to go and buy it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough in my generation that, you know, the best music in the world was also the most popular, which was, of course, the Beatles and various other bands in the 60s who sort of live on today. So, yeah, I'd be trying to get hold of some of those records and play them on our little record player.
Yes, they were in those days. Or maybe get hold of one of those big HMV radiograms, big speaker at the front.
We just had one of those little box ones, really kind of humble thing. And I used to turn the bass up full I realised years later, of course, I was a bass freak, but I just thought it sounded better.
The world's changed, hasn't it, Tim? A hell of a lot. And when Napster came in and various other things, the days of getting a song played on the radio, then going to the record bar, we don't have record bars anymore. And it's just changed so much the whole industry, hasn't it?
It has changed a lot. Although, weirdly enough, you know, it still seems apparent that unless you get massive radio play, then you don't get a genuine hit single. You might get a lot of Spotify's and whatever, this, that and the other. But you know what I mean? To get into that top 10, still need massive airplay.
The Beatles have got this great movie out, and it talks about their history between 62 and 66, and they're talking about getting their record played on the radio for the first time, and the BBC were nice enough to ring them and say when the first record would get played, and they pulled over to the side of the road, all the guys were in the band together, and they jumped out of the car and all over the place. Can you remember the first time you heard one of your songs played on the radio?
I can't remember the first time, but it was always very precious, and you would literally be turning it up full and exulting in the fact that you and thousands of other people were all listening at the same time. Everything sounds better on radio anyway because of the compression and that, so it just kicks in, you know, there's no thrill like it.
Especially like those old AM radio days, which you're on at the moment, mate, so you're getting compressed. I thought you'd like to know that.
They compress the hell out of them, and sometimes they even speed them up.
I read something last night. It said Split Enz were the art rock pop pioneers, and I'm thinking, when you started doing this, and the big hair and the incredibly colourful clothing and stuff like that, were you getting into art, or were you basically saying, look, if we're going to kick butt here, we need to do something different?
Well, we had guys in the band who had been at art school, I mean, particularly Noel Crombie, who used to make our costumes, and he sort of took it on as an art project almost, like a sculpture with 12 legs, you know. And it was like performance art. And, you know, so the fact that it was all in the band and it seemed to relate to the music at the time, which was full of changes and time changes and different sections would come up. And, you know, just when you thought you knew what the song was doing, it would suddenly lurch sideways. And so the costumes and the look of the band were very much like that too.
Just talking about Noel, because there have been very, very few bands who did live performances on stage where a guy comes out and starts playing the spoons, eh? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, no, he became legendary for the spoons. It literally started one night in a club in Wellington, New Zealand. There was a kitchen out the back, and we were playing the song as usual, and we heard the clitter clatter of something, and Noel just walked on doing the spoons. We hadn't asked him to do it, and we obviously fell apart laughing, and that became a legendary part of our show.
Yeah, well, it came to Australia, did well. Then, of course, you go to Great Britain. Talking about the early life, because it was all about mates, wasn't it? How hard was it? Because Phil Judd leaves the band, 1977, because you've been with him and he'd been with you from the very start, hadn't he? And then you made the phone call to your little brother.
Yeah, that's right. It was, you know, we sort of hung in there. I mean, we were having great rehearsals all the way along, and I think it's always a sign of a great band is when you love rehearsing together, you love being in a room and figuring stuff out musically and writing. And so that was always very, very strong, but the external circumstances were very tough. And when Neil joined, things were, you know, only middling. And we eventually came back to Australia around 79. And that was when we started to cross over into the mainstream in Australia with songs like I See Red. And then, of course, the True Colours came along.
And I got you. And I mean, some fantastic songs there where you felt like everything was working together. Then, of course, you started seriously to think about solo performing. You'd written some great songs for the band and everything was going well. Neil was starting to do his thing, and it was about Christmas 1984 when you actually made the break officially, but you actually already got into doing your own solo thing, hadn't you?
Yeah, that's right. I did Escapade, you know, which did a lot better than I expected, and I guess that gave me a taste of freedom in a way, a taste of something outside the band. I reckon bands have about 10 or 12 years in them usually, and we'd been going for 12 years at that point and still doing good things, but yeah, it was time to kind of step out and grow up a bit and kind of try something new.
You know the song by Jerry Rafferty, Stuck in the Middle with You, which he wrote about the guys in the band and then became a hit. That would have been very popular with him, but anyway. But Fraction Too Much Friction had nothing to do with leaving the band or anything at all?
No, it didn't. It wasn't like Split Enz was full of fights and arguments and that. It really wasn't. There were definitely views that were never expressed, but nothing that was kind of fatal to the core spirit of the band. So no, it was just a play on words, and you know, just generally looking at the state of things, I suppose. Yeah.
What's the song where you think at the end of the day, when you're sitting down in your chair at 85 years of age, geez, I'm glad I wrote that song?
it is an impossible question to answer, really. You know, many songwriters have used the metaphor of they're all our children, and you know, blah blah blah. But I mean, in a sense, they are. You know, you can certainly recognise the ones that don't work, but the ones that do work, they're all equaled. You know, and I play them still on stage. I'll be playing them at Ely Beach, and I just played them in Toowoomba the other night, and it's a great feeling. You connect with that crowd, like, you know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, good when people sing along with your songs.
Sing along, wave their arms, yell, smile, you know, dance. It's just, it's the best.
Well, let's get into the Crowded House Years now, because we're moving along. So the Mullaines, and then the guys got together, did their thing, and so on. And then you became involved again, because you write songs on the first album, which of course Crowded House, and then Woodface. That must have been an incredible period for you guys too, just to watch Neil and the guys grow as a band, because they became called the new Beatles and all sorts of stuff at some stages, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's so much to do with timing. I think Keith Richards has said this before, but you know, they were a brilliant band with brilliant songs, but sometimes it is also a question of timing, and the time was perfect for them. People were hungry for what they had, and it went amazingly well. And I joined that for that brief, you know, for Woodface, because Neil and I were halfway through writing for a Finn Brothers record. But in the end, it was easier to just soak it all up into one thing. And it was a great experience. I loved every minute of it.
Okay, well, let's finish with Finn, because you came back together, the two of you, and you went into a studio together and did some brilliant acoustic work and played all the instruments. And it says he even got to play the drums. And so what, was that some sort of passion you wanted to do, play the drums on a record, or what's going on there?
Yeah, I know. I've always been a bit of a closet drummer. I remember when I was a kid, I used to go down to the local music store and where they sold a few instruments, and there was a Ludwig drum kit in the window. And of course, Ringo played Ludwig, so I'd seen him on TV, in black and white TV, playing the Ludwig. So I used to stand in front of the shop and just stare at the drums, and it was like I was in love. I just had to do it, yeah.
I must ask you one last question, and it goes back to this movie I'm going to go and watch tonight, and I'm not sure if you've seen it, but see if you can. About the Beatles.
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, mate, it's spectacular. I've seen so much of it without seeing the movie, but they're talking about the Beatles, and they get asked the obvious question, is it how big, did you realise how big you were going to be and how big you were at the time? And Paul McCartney says, nah. He said, seriously, we were just a bunch of blokes travelling around in the same car. We slept in two different rooms when we were working together. But the big thing was we were so tight and we just worked bloody hard. And he said, we got one day off a month and we just worked and worked. But the big thing was, as you had just alluded to a couple of minutes ago, we knew what everyone was thinking, so we could do stuff, and it just felt so damn good. So with Split Enz and your involvement with the Crowded House, it must be like that, I suppose, in some ways. Just the feeling of just working together and everyone knows how the other person's thinking.
Yeah, definitely. There's got to be that great sort of chemistry, telepathy, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
There's got to be a bit of competition. I mean, there's no arguing with the fact that Lennon and McCartney were battling for supremacy the whole time, you know. But at the same time, when that creates this amazing energy. I mean, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, that sort of thing. Every band needs a bit of that. And in Split Enz, we were definitely great admirers of each other, like a lot of respect. So we were always trying to kind of, you know, measure up in a weird sort of way.
Understood. So here we are. You're coming to the Beautiful Witch Sundays in November of this year on the Saturday night, about 8:30, you'll walk on stage. What are we going to see?
Well, you know, we've just talked about it. I mean, basically I'll be doing songs from throughout, so Split Enz, Crowded House, solo, and, you know, just finding the ones that I still love to play, because I don't do that many shows anymore. I mostly do festivals these days, and so it's kind of fresh every time. And the crowd sort of prick up their ears and go, oh, yeah, I know that one. And all of a sudden we're on, you know.
The All Blacks, Underarm Bowling. I'll finish with this. You started with a band called Split Enz, and you changed the name to Split Enz, Split Enz, because of your passion for New Zealand. You just love being that. Have you ever got over the fact that when things started to really go, we started calling you an Australian band?
Oh, yeah, I didn't mind. I've never minded that. Because, I mean, it was thanks to Australia that we made it. Because, you know, it really was the making of the band to come back in 79 and constantly play in the pubs and clubs around Australia. Yep. It made us tight. It made us focused. And, you know, the rest is history. So, I married an Australian. Our first child was born in Sydney. I could go on. I mean, you know, I am sort of in love with Australia, and I'll always be a New Zealander, I'm not that. I'm not really a nationalistic sort of person anymore. I'm kind of...
You've grown past that.
Music kind of brings us all together, you know.
Tim, thank you so much for joining us. Looking forward to seeing you in November. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was good to chat. I'm really looking forward to Early Beach Fest. So, yeah, see you there.